WEHC 90.7 broadcasts from the campus of Emory and Henry, providing listeners with locally produced radio daily and offering students a hands-on learning environment. WEHC is also a source for national and international news. Stay tuned, connected, informed, and entertained. This is listener-supported radio. For more information, WEHCFM.com. We are the voice of Southwest Virginia.
Hello, friend. My name is Zach Holt, and this is Come to the Table. Some of our most intimate conversations happen at the kitchen table. Walls crumble as space is created to know one another more deeply. Our hurt is replaced by healing when we simply pull up a chair, let down our guard, and be who we are, where we are. In our time together, we will step into the shoes of others through recovery stories of redemption, offer connections and resources for those in need, and come together as a community starving for revival in our region. So if you're hungry, you came to the right place. Well, friend, we are so glad to have you listening here today on our show, and so grateful to my good friend Al, who is joining us to share his experience and his strength and his hope with you all. So Al, why don't you say hi?
Hello, guys.
We're glad to have you with us, Al. So,
glad to be here.
Let's just dive right into it. So why don't you tell us a little bit about kind of growing up and early days of your journey? Sort of walk us through some of that.
All right. I grew up, I was born in Atlanta, Georgia. My family, my dad was an apartment maintenance supervisor, and my mother was a stay-at-home mom. And due to my dad being a apartment maintenance supervisor, part of his pay and benefits was always that he got an apartment. And he was very, very successful, very good at his job. So he was moved around a whole lot to straighten certain places up, apartments up. And so I moved around a lot as a kid. And I struggled a lot with my self-esteem. It just seemed like as soon as I would make friends, I would up and leave. So it always gave me this want to fit in. I just wanted to fit in. We moved up to this area in 92 to help take care of my grandmother, and my dad had found employment up here. I went to high school here, did very well. I was a honor student in high school, graduated high school, went to college at Alice Lloyd College, and played baseball. My freshman year at Alice Lloyd College, I had a roommate. He played on the baseball team with me. He introduced me to pain pills and nerve pills. One day we was in the dorm, and he just asked me, if I wanted to get high. And at the time, I was kind of struggling with the same thing I had when I was younger, like the need to fit in and just, yeah, you know, want to feel like I was cool and a part of the group. So, I did it. It was straight down from there. I instantly fell in love with the feeling. It allowed me to, allowed me to play baseball better, to interact better, allowed me to be more outgoing, and just a whole lot of things. And it steadily got worse. It got to where by the middle of my sophomore year in college, I was doing it multiple times on a daily basis, and I'd become pretty addicted. The baseball our coach actually called us snorting pills in the dugout, and I was kicked off the baseball team. I come back home to Big Stone Gap. Of course, my parents were very disappointed, and I felt like I had let down a lot of people. I guess I decided that my way out of it was to join the military. I thought, well, it'll get me away from this area. I'll stay busy. I'll be able to do without it. And, it's the answer to my problems. So in 2001, I joined the Army, went to basic training, completed basic training during my AIT school. It's where you get your job, what you're going to do in the military. 9/11 happened.
Wow.
And it was a scary moment, especially being there, because we all didn't know what was going to happen. Like, was we going to get straight to war? You know, we didn't know if we was going to be deployed straight overseas to war, you know what the situation was going to be. As far as my drug addiction was concerned, being in basic training and AIT, I didn't have time to think about drugs. I stayed constantly busy. After graduation from AIT, I would come home for 2 weeks. And at that point, I went to Fort Eustis up in towards Virginia Beach, Newport News. And from there was told we would be shipping to Iraq within the month. Hmm. So
how'd you feel about that?
I was nervous. I'm not going to lie. Like any man that says that he is not scared in that situation is probably either lying or really has a major mental problem. So it was scary, but at the same time, I think it further kept my mind away from the drugs because I was so focused on that. So in a way, I guess it just kind of prolonged things because once we got to Iraq, I was there for about 3 weeks, and I was in a IED explosion. I was injured and spent a month and a half at Ramstein Air Force Base in Germany. Due to my injuries, I was placed on some pretty heavy pain medications, morphine, Dilaudid, and of course, given nerve pills as well for the PTSD and man, that was not the answer. At the time, I know things have changed now, but at the time, that was the military's way of handling things. That gets you, you know, filled up on drugs and send you back out there. So when I left the hospital, I was not only re-addicted, it was 100 times worse.
Wow.
So the whole time I was in Iraq from that point on, you find ways. I mean, I was smoking opiates and, you know, some of the guys around the FOBs and the bases, you know, they had pills and they had, you know, so I was back into it, you know, worse than I ever was. And when I come home, you know, I was having a hard time. But I knew I couldn't continue. So at the time, the doctor I was seeing was just starting a medicated assistant treatment program with buprenorphine. Mm-hmm. And I become a part of that. I was placed on buprenorphine. And, man, it was a wonder drug for me at the time. It completely took away the cravings and allowed me to function and to not, you know, be 100%, you know, focused on drugs and, yeah, you know, getting high. So I finished my 2-year active duty role in the Army. At that time, I become in the reserves and got a job actually working for the state of Virginia as a corrections officer at Wallandridge State Prison. Did good. After a year, I was promoted to canine and did that for 2 years, and I was promoted to a canine instructor's position up in Powhatan, Virginia. Did that for about 2 more years, and I was placed back in this region as the canine coordinator for the Southwest region of Virginia. During my time overseas and things, during that time, I had got married. Me and my first wife had a lot of issues, we had got a divorce. We had got a divorce, and it had left me, you know, pretty devastated.
Sure.
But I met my second wife, and my whole world changed. she was, I don't know, I'm like, she was the love of my life. She was my soulmate. She was the person that, as long as she was around, I was calm. I mean, she completely and utterly changed my life. She was one of the greatest people you could ever meet. I mean, she everybody loved her. I mean, she was amazing. She was a respiratory therapist at Holston Valley Hospital there in Kingsport, and me and her were doing really, really good. We bought a brand new house there in the Ridgefield parts of Kingsport, you know, an upper level,
yeah, that's awesome.
Part of Kingsport, and we were doing really, you know, really good. But about 3 years into our marriage, I kind of noticed that she was having spells of depression and self-esteem issues and things like that, and she started getting these real bad migraine headaches. She would randomly get these migraine headaches, and they were debilitating. They would cause her to not be able to go to work, and she was having issues with doctors figuring out what it was and things like that. So we decided that we would go to church. She started praying, and we started going to church. But I believed in God at the time, and I knew the stories of Jesus, and but I never was really what you would call a religious person. As a kid there in Atlanta, they if you went to Sunday school, they would the bus drivers would give you candy. So, I would go to Sunday school for that reason. But we started going to church, and it just wasn't in me at the time. I thought my addict mentality, narcissism, thought I was the answer, that I could solve the problems. And of course that wasn't the issue. So about a month into us going to church, Marcy, on August the 13th, 2018, 4:31 p.m., I just got done mowing, come up to the house, and the Kingsport City detectives come knocked on the door. I answered the door, and they told me that Marcy had shot and killed herself down at Domtar Park in Kingsport, which was about a 3-minute drive from where we live. And wow. That's the last thing I can remember is them telling me that, and then seeing my stepson, his face at the news. And I guess my mind blocks me from seeing that. And the next thing I remember is having to plan her funeral. I can remember bits and pieces about that. Like I said, at the time I had worked for the state as a canine instructor, trainer, and handler for 17 years. And due to her death being suicide, we wasn't going to have the money for her to have a proper burial. So I took a cash buyout retirement from the state. It was about $72,000. I paid for her funeral, and the rest just, it got blowed. I immersed myself in addiction this time. I had no cares, that I wanted to die myself. And I would try to get high enough on a daily basis that I wouldn't wake up that next morning. And I blamed God, because like I said, right before her suicide, we had started going to church, and so we started trying to pray. And I felt like, you know, God, why did you let this, you let this happen to me? As soon as I start trying to get a relationship with you, you take the one thing in this world that I cherished, the one thing that would, keep me calm, and it, you know, she was my everything, and I blamed God. In this addiction, I became highly addicted to methamphetamine, fentanyl, pretty much anything that would alter my mind, I was addicted to it. I would stay so messed up on a daily basis, half the time I didn't know where I was at or what I was doing. And due to this, I started getting in legal trouble myself. I went to jail numerous times for shoplifting, simple possession, and I would stay for a little while, get out, get high while I was in jail, continue to hate God, cuss him on a daily basis, blame him for everything that was wrong with me. When I wasn't high and just out of my mind, it was me just being angry. angry at the Lord, you know. But this this last time when I went to jail in 2020, I got a big sentence then. It had all finally caught up with me, and I had two felony charges of possession with intent to distribute methamphetamine. I pretty much thought, you know, I'd spend the rest of my days or my good days in prison and in jail. Well, during this time, I had a cellie that was very, very spiritual, very religious. He would read the Bible out loud on a daily basis, and of course, I would tell him to shut up and you know, mock him for his beliefs and you know, kind of give him a hard time. But at the same time, subconsciously, it was starting to sink in a little bit. I started to seeing more and more things that were happening, like that I felt like things were turning around. And I went to court. I got my sentence. Looking back now, it was the hand of the Lord. I received a 10-year sentence, but I only had to serve 2 years. The rest was suspended. And at that moment is when I started opening myself up to the Lord again, and praying and kind of not holding that grudge like I did before. And about a month into that, they hit me with another indictment for distribution of meth. And it destroyed me. I was like, well, there's no way with these other two charges. There's no way. I'm done. Well, to back up a little bit, the first two charges, the possessions with intent, were both in Wise County. Well, at the time, I had a lawyer, and she told me to file a global plea in Wise County so they would just put the two charges together and give me one sentence. You know, so that's what I did. So, you know, the judge was good. You know, he told me that. He said, if I see you again, you know, it's not going to be good. So when I caught that third charge for distribution, I was done. And, you know, I sank back down into depression. But the thing that was different was where I had opened my heart up to the Lord. He was showing me in his own way that he was there, because it got to where it was like it didn't affect me in the way that I thought it would. And I kept praying on a daily and nightly basis. And one night I just said a prayer that, you know, if God, if you would help me through this, I promise you that I'll live my life for you, and I'll do what's right. And about 3 days after that, I called my lawyer, and she was real excited and happy. And I was like, why are you being so, you know, like I'm getting ready to go to prison for a long time. And she was like, Mr. Smith, she was like, I just want to tell you that if you have any qualms with the Lord, you know, because I had talked to her about it, she said, you better drop them now and get down on your knees.
Yeah.
Because where I had took that global plea in Wise County, that closed indictment, they were supposed to open it then and me have the three charges. And like she told me, she said, if you would have had that. So, my lawyer, you know, she told me that, you know, you've been granted a miracle. She said, because if they would have opened that sealed indictment for distribution when they were supposed to with the global plea, that you would have done 10 years plus in prison. And she said, but the way it sits now, the way they done it, that they have no choice but to add that distribution charge to the other charges that you already had, and you get no more sentence for it. That was the moment that I knew I seen God's hand at work.
Definitely.
And I knew that was I was going to live my life for him. I didn't know how or where or what to do it, but I knew I was going to do it.
Yeah.
So when I got out of jail in November 2023, I went straight to November 24, I got straight out. I went straight to rehab up at Hillsville, Virginia. I did good. 3 months there, would go to church and I prayed, but I still just didn't didn't know, you know, exactly how I needed to live my life for the Lord. I left from Hillsborough, come here to BLR, and you know, it was amazing. They were really good to me, and I started seeing these guys that were in the 117 program, and I seen how at peace and just how excited and just everything they were, and I was like, you know, I need that. So I started looking into, you know, what the 117 program was, and I said, you know, I told myself that's where I need to be, because I can learn about Jesus and how I'm supposed to live. So I talked to a few guys, and you know, talked to Zach, and you know, I was accepted into the 117, and it didn't change my life. It gave me a new life.
That's good.
I finally learned how to live with Jesus in me, and how to pray, and just how to live life in general. And my life's been better than it's ever been before. The Lord has allowed me to forgive myself for anything that I thought I had to do with Marcy's death. He showed me that through her death, you know, good things can still happen, that my life wasn't over, and that I still had a purpose. I received employment at McAllister's Deli there, and I worked there for a little while, and I started doing little things around the 117, and still over at BLR helping out, and they took notice and offered me a job to work at BLR for the new section of the IOP Opportunity Hall, and I couldn't believe. I thought that was going to be my end goal, was to do something like that. You know, I thought it would take me 4 or 5 years, but you know, through believing in Christ and you know, putting Him first, miracles started happening.
Yeah.
And it's been wonderful ever since, man. I'm in a family. I got guys around me that love me. I've never had that before. I don't feel like I have to be high or do anything special to fit in. It's just the Lord that, you know, that's what we have in common. And we're here, and we do our best to make the best of our situation. And it just amazes me to see some of the guys and some of the way they grew up and their situations and you know, how much worse it was than mine. And to see the change in them and just the growth, it's unbelievable. You know, I've always been a natural leader, and I was told that, but just never believed in myself. And being here and having others believe in me and the Lord showing me that, you know, that this is what He wants, and you know, He wants me to help others and lead others to Him. It's not giving me a new purpose, and it's giving me a whole new life.
Amen.
It's just I'm completely different all the way around. I don't worry like I used to. I don't have anxiety like I used to. I mean, there was a hole in my soul, my heart, and my soul that I could never fill with any drug or relationship or anything, and the Lord has filled that hole. Hmm. And I feel like a whole person now. So,
man, that's awesome. That all of it is, gosh, there's so much there. I want to hear, because I know a lot of people, you know, go through life and they have kind of those Marcy moments where it seems like, you know, the bottom falls out, that there's never going to be anything good again. What would you, knowing what you know now, how would you speak into the life of someone who has just been devastated by the worst news that they could ever imagine?
I would tell them to dig deep inside themselves, and you know, open your heart and just believe. The Lord speaks to us all in His own way on a daily basis. There's small little, like, there's no such thing as coincidences. It's called God speaking. I mean, just pay attention to it and believe in it. And I promise you, from the deepest part, if you open your heart to the Lord, He will step in and show you that whatever you're going through, there's a reason in for it, and that his grand scheme of things is a whole lot more important than your one little niche in your life. Yeah. He's the master builder, and sometimes we don't understand an architect's plans, and but you just have to trust that the house you're in is going to stand.
That's right.
So it's the same thing with the Lord. You just got to trust that what he's built will thrive.
Yeah.
And I promise you that it will.
Man, that's good. That's really good. What about, because, I mean, it sounded like, you know, you had a season where you were cursing, you know, cursing God and hated God. And how does that season make you appreciate his presence and his love for you, despite all of that? How does that strike you?
Oh, man, it's so amazing that despite all that, like, just all the bad things I had done before and through my addiction and the ways I cussed him and hated him, like deep in my heart, blamed him. And to know that through all that, he still loves me and that he's done the miracles and the things in my life since I brought him into my heart. It's just, it's unbelievable. It's not unbelievable. It's God's, it's a miracle.
Yeah.
I mean, his love, despite, because I can promise you that there's nobody out there that hated the Lord at that time as much as I did. And for him to pull me through that and to show me that he still had plans for me, man, he can do that for anybody. I promise you. I can promise you, you couldn't hate and blame the Lord no more than I did. So
it's grace, man. It's wild how no matter, you know, how much we hate him, his love for us never stops.
He saw me through and still, you know, like a month before I received that miracle of the sentence, I was, you know, cussing him and to know that and for him to still grant me that miracle and show me, you know, his love, man, it means more than anything. I've never felt as love as I do right now, just between the Lord and the men that I'm around on a daily basis and my mentors, Zach, yeah. Uriah. Yeah. I've never felt this before, and it's amazing.
And it says in Scripture, he's not a respecter of persons. So anything he's done for you, Al, he'll do for anybody out there.
I truly believe that. I know that he will. I've seen him do it, you know, I've seen him do it with others here, like in their lives.
It's incredible.
He could do it for anybody out there as well. They just open your heart. That's all I can say is just open your heart and love and learn how to not just pray to Jesus or to God, but talk to Jesus. Mm-hmm. It don't have to be getting down on your knees and at the bed or in pure meditation. Just on a daily basis when you wake up in the morning, just have a conversation with him like you would anybody else. I promise you he will talk back in his way. He will talk back.
He's always listening.
Always listening.
Well, Al, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story with us, sharing your heart with us. Love you to death, man. And
love you too,
excited,
Zach.
Excited for everything that the Lord has ahead in store, all the lives you're gonna bless, and it's just redemption is beautiful. So I appreciate you sharing your story, man.
And friend, thank you for having me.
Friends out there, I want to thank you for joining us on this episode of Come to the Table. We really hope that it's been an encouragement to your recovery, or perhaps created in you a curiosity of what it could look like to live into this selfless mindset of service to others. If there's anywhere our ministry can come beside you, we encourage you to reach out to us at thetablebristol117@gmail.com. Friend, you do not have to walk this road alone. Hope is closer than you know. You too can have light from darkness. You can have dancing from morning. Joy can be yours. And if there's any way we can help you, please reach out. Grace and peace to you, my friend.
WEHC 90.7, broadcast from the campus of Emory and Henry. This is listener-supported radio. For more information, WEHCFM.com. We are the voice of Southwest Virginia.